Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchie. Jacob's here. Okay. So, Little Witch Academia. What is Little Witch? What the fuck is Little Witch Academia besides...
To use that kind of language besides for the pure-hearted family show.
Besides Harry Potter and the Netflix investment. What, what is it?
I mean,
explain what it is.
You forgot the key factor, which is all-girls school Harry Potter and the Netflix investment.
Yeah, sure. So it started life not as a TV series. What I think people chiefly watched, although we'll get into that in a little bit. It started life as an OVA, sort of. Anime Mirai was a project that happened back in like 2013, where a bunch of studios got funding for a short, like a half an hour thing.
Yeah.
And Triggers was Little Witch Academia. And then they crowdfunded a sequel to that on Kickstarter. And it was a pretty big success. It did really, really well. They made an hour-long movie called The Enchanted Parade.
Yeah.
Isn't that what it's called? Both of those are also on Netflix. Then Netflix swooped in, and this is just what I read. Now, I don't know if this is exactly accurate or not, but what I read, based on all the interviews that I read about this, the show was chiefly funded by Netflix. Which, looking at it, I would say there was some money involved. Like, it's a very lavish production. So there's a half an hour original, there's a 50-59 minute movie thing that was crowdfunded, and now there's this 25 episode TV show that aired over like winter and spring.
In Japan it aired over winter and spring. We got it into 12 episode chunks on Netflix just recently, spaced out over 2 months or something.
Yeah, something like that. And the first half came out like late, like early summer, like around like May, June, something like that. Second half came out fairly recently.
Yeah.
And so that's what's available. It's by Studio Trigger, famous ex-Gainax folks who made such shows as Kill la Kill, Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt. Gurren Lagann.
It's like basically the entire Gurren
Lagann adult
team,
stuff for adults. I think the biggest thing about Little Witch Academia is that it is not, like, just for adults. Like, if you're coming into it as a Studio Trigger person, it's not what you normally expect from Studio Trigger, like, in the slightest, really.
I mean, visually.
Story-wise.
Visually.
Visually, yeah, for the most part, yes. But story-wise, no.
No. I guess that's the most striking thing. People sort of associate Trigger with the sort of sophomoric, like, explosions and dongs and boobs and blood, and but not in a scary harsh way, but in a like this stuff is fun sort of way, like purposeful cheapness in order to elicit a gag, that kind of thing, like basically Imaishi style, which isn't necessarily fair to everybody at Trigger because there are a lot of different talents working there who aren't all Imaishi, but he's largely defined the Trigger look and feel.
So when you're looking at, when you think of Studio Trigger, odds are you're thinking of an Imaishi thing. You're thinking of something he illustrated or something he contributed a lot to the aesthetic of.
Because people bring up, like, When Supernatural Battles Become Commonplace and Kizniver. Like, those aren't shows that you think of when you think of Trigger.
Because they were largely failures. Like,
they
no
were
one
failures,
cared.
A and B.
You don't think about Petite Princess Yusi when you think about Gainax. That's because the show was a failure. So, like, well, I don't know that it was actually a failure. It's just that nobody seemed to care about it. So didn't have a fan base.
Right, but even in those shows, you can see the Gainax and Trigger sensibility of toward animation, which is sort of, like, intentionally sloppy to give the impression of, like, sort of a wild, fantastical level of motion that's not really specific on, like,
is sloppy lines. The adjective? That is not the adjective I would use.
The term I always used for it is runny eggs, like when somebody's whipping eggs. is what it looks like to me, but I don't really have a... Because sloppy is a derogatory, you're right, and that's not really... You don't want a derogatory term, because it looks really cool, but it is a Hallmark style. But it's present in those other shows as well, but you don't really think of them when you think of Trigger. So Trigger, for better or for worse, they have defined a studio house style, which is not something that a lot of anime studios do, but Trigger definitely has.
When I think of Trigger, I think of something that's not supposed to have a dragon mouth suddenly having a dragon mouth.
That's definitely in Little Witch Academia.
It's in all their shows, I think.
I know, but...
Eventually someone on effects, somebody who's animating effects will make those effects look like dragon mouths at some point.
I think Kill la Kill, or was it... Maybe it was Gurren Lagann had a boat, had a steamship that
had a dragon mouth on it. Yeah, a lot of dragon mouth. I will admit to not being the hugest fan of the attitude that Trigger puts out there about themselves. To me, it's very transparent, like mythos building. Like, we are building up this reputation of ourselves as this bad boy studio.
It's like, my dad was Gainax, you know.
Yeah, hey, you know, my dad was Gainax.
My dad created, or my uncle created, the End Genesis Evangelion.
Which is, it's fun. I'm not calling him out or anything. I'm just saying, me personally, it falls a little flat. Mm-hmm. Their work speaks for itself, and it's good. Like, I like a lot of their stuff. I love Kill la Kill. I think it's a good show. A lot of people don't like it now, and I feel like history is being rewritten on Kill la Kill, but I still like it a lot.
I guess. I feel
nowadays,
like,
the most common thing I hear said about Kill la Kill is, I didn't like that show. Like, that is, like, the most common thing I hear. Yeah.
I hear that from, like, there's a very vocal... So, like, there are people who feel that way about Gurren Lagann, too. But they don't really feel the need to, like, say it all the time. Or maybe they did years ago, but I don't remember. In 2008, 2009, when I was kind of... When that was sort of a thing that people were talking about, I don't remember people... I'm the guy who doesn't like Gurren Lagann. But there are definitely people who are like, I'm the guy who doesn't like Kill la Kill.
Yeah, it's me, the special... I'm the special one.
You're not the only person. A, you're not the only person. And B, like, I find that's more of a... And that's not specific to Kill la Kill. There are anime shows, like Death Note is one of those as well. I'm the person who doesn't... Oh, Attack on Titan is definitely that. Like, nobody can deny that Attack on Titan is a really, really, really big thing that attracted a lot of people to anime, and people outside of anime watch it. Like, it was a big deal. But if you talk to any given person who's really into anime, they want to tell you, like, oh, I don't like Attack on Titan.
Yeah, and, totally, yeah.
And you know, it's just one of those shows. I think if there's something that's a little bit more evocative or, like, I don't know, gins up a lot of... emotions, or like maybe a contentious fandom or something like that, maybe that's what causes, I don't know. But Kill la Kill fell in that pit, definitely, of like the people who wanted to let you know that they did not like it, really, really, really wanted to let you know that they did not like it. But bring it back to Little Witch Academia, that is definitely not the case with Little Witch Academia. I haven't seen really anybody say anything like profoundly negative about it. Like, if they don't care about it, they just don't care about it. But Little Witch Academia is like this sort of like nice, soft, like a mattress, like a nice soft mattress of everybody saying, this is nice, like, I like this. So yeah, so we should probably discuss, I guess, the show and what makes it so different from other Trigger things.
Well, before we do that, I feel like, did you see Sex and Violence at Mach Speed?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's what I don't, like, I saw, and it's like, alright, like,
well,
it's panty pure,
and stocking. That's
it's
too far
pure
from
id, and like, Little Witch Academia, to me, it's weird. I think I like Kill la Kill of their work. I think I like Kill la Kill the most.
Mm-hmm.
Gurren Lagann's probably right behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Panty and Stocking and Sex and Violence with Ed Mock Speed are like what I don't like. I'm not into it at all. And those are the most like, yeah, this is our fucking attitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like,
well,
it's
those
all
are the
attitude.
Most Imaishi, because I think when he started off, like with Gainax, like his big first project, people were like, oh, this is Imaishi, was Dead Leaves, which notoriously people do not like. I maybe know some people who like Dead Leaves, but for the most part, it's like you say the stuff that's the most Trigger, the most id, I feel like isn't necessarily the most Trigger, it's the most Imaishi, which I don't, you know.
Okay, well, you can make that distinction.
Well, I make that distinction because he didn't have a whole lot to do with Little Witch Academia, which is another...
Yeah. The thing is, what I'm getting at is, it feels like there's a Trigger spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Little Witch Academia is like all the way over on one side. Kill la Kill feels like it's kind of in the middle of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then that stuff, like Sex and Violence, the hardcore, like super Imaishi stuff is all the way over on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like Little Witch Academia, I guess, sort of... It falls like... I don't know. It's like it's somewhere on the spectrum that just wasn't what I was expecting. Like I'm totally drawing a shitty metaphor here.
It's unlike anything else Trigger's done in that it really you could and probably should watch it with like a 10-year-old girl, like a 10-year-old. Like it seems like it's not like kids only, but it Harry Potter is the best way to compare it. Like because plenty of adults like Harry Potter, teens like Harry Potter, but it really feels like it's made for and should be kind of enjoyed by like older children. Like it captures the spirit of like an older child audience. That's the way it is. So definitely.
Pretty much anybody with precocious children who are like 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is not something that Trigger has ever made.
No. And I wouldn't say like watch other don't get your kids in a Trigger. They're like, oh, what? They animated Little Witch Academia. Like, you go back to their catalog. But so the show itself, run it down for us. Give us the basics.
Well, right before we do that, somebody mentioned in the chat, like, well, I mean, you have to talk about this is Yo-Yo Yoshinari's baby, who is, like...
Which it was.
One of the most talented animators working at Trigger, but hasn't really helmed... Like, he helmed the short films, the compilation of short films for Gurren Lagann, and you can kind of see, like, his directorial voice there, but mostly he's known as an animator and a storyboarder, and so that doesn't give you control over a project's tone like director does. And so this being his first, like, full directed series, I think... you could say, like, okay, well, this is Yo-Yo Yoshinari. Even then, however, I saw Yo-Yo Yoshinari's work on those first two movies, and those first two Little Witch Academia movies are more juvenile and crazy and, like, irreverent and triggery than the series is. So even then, I think you could say, well, it's a little different for Trigger, even by Yo-Yo Yoshinari standards. And, you know, those Gurren Lagann short films, they were also a little bit more cheeky, irreverent, you know. So the story, Little Witch Academia, is, I mean, it's kind of Harry Potter, but the basics is, like, there's this girl named Akko who is really, really wants to be a witch. And most witches are of, like, European heritage and the big school where they all tend to go to, the Hogwarts, if you will, is, like, in Europe somewhere. And she's from Japan, and so she's already seen as an outsider. She doesn't have any, like, magical lineage. But she was inspired by a traveling magician named Shiny Chariot, who did, like, what people consider low magic, which is, like, doing spectacle shows for normies, for muggles, I guess.
Well, what witches consider low magic.
Yes, what witches consider low magic. And so she goes to school, and she's, like, immediately struck by how everybody thinks, like, oh, you came here, you have no magical lineage, and you came here because you were inspired by Shiny Chariot? Like, that's lame. And so she's immediately on the outs, finds out she has basically no talent for magic. She can't even ride on a broom, which is, like, the most simple thing, like, you should be kind of be able to do even before you come to the school. And so she makes friends with the two other weirdos in school, Susie, who is, like, sort of a weird, sadistic, mushroom and poison-loving goth, and Latte, who is sort of shy wallflower who, like, communes with spirits and likes books and, you know, bookish girl. And they get made fun of by the sort of debutante of the school, the like, grand poobah, most talented girl there with the, like, the most pure lineage, Diana. And she's the Draco Malfoy, I guess. But she's, like, less evil and more just, I don't want to have anything to do with you because you're a mudblood. And it's basically her adventures at school leading into eventually a larger plot surrounding the history of magic and its future going forward.
And the first half is pretty different from the second half. It's not that different. Like, the second half is kind of a bunch of story arcs, like two or three episodes that kind of tell individual stories.
Mm-hmm.
But it is leading towards a conclusion. The first half feels more like it doesn't really get to the story part until,
right,
like, kind of the end of the first half.
The first half is more of an exercise in, like, episodic fun. And you could see more, like, that's where the Imaishi episode is. And there's more individual episodes that are attributed to, like, creative staff at Trigger that's just like, here's the thing I want to do. It's a little bit more episodic Space Dandy-ish with, like, different magical adventures kind of being their own thing. And then the second half is like, all right, here's all the plot that we had, that we were, like, holding on to a little bit. And here you go.
Yeah. So did you like the first half better or the second half?
I liked the first half better. I was more endeared to the... I like stuff that happened in the second half. I liked the overall plot that they wrote for the story. I should clarify, I also looked up... I was like, another reason that the tone of this may seem very different to people is that the head writer... There's a couple different writers. Some of them are on past Trigger projects, some of them aren't. But for the most part, the writing staff isn't really Trigger alumni in that regard. It's not storyboarders. A lot of their past works were like written by storyboarders, written by artists. The head writer, I think her name is, I may get this wrong, but it's Michiru Yoshida, I think, or it's something very similar to that. And she she did a lot of head writing on like a lot of family shows, a lot of network magical girl shows like Shugokara and stuff like that. And so her pedigree is kind of with this kind of entertainment, not so much Trigger's, you know, forte. So that feeling of like, oh, this is a sort of a magical girl show that's a little bit more continuity based, but otherwise the tone is the same thing that you could show to families. Like that kind of probably comes from her. They probably brought her in for that purpose.
The show isn't anything like Maho Shoujo anything.
I disagree entirely. She learns lessons, like specific lessons with like words like loyalty and compassion and stuff like
that.
That
all struck me as like Harry Potter. Like, there's some Sailor Moon in there. There's Sailor Moon in there.
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't think that... Like, if you read the interviews with the director, that's not what he was trying to make. He's like, I don't think this is, like... That's what you think of, but that's not what we made.
Uh-huh. Well,
and,
I think they
like,
made
it's not what
that's...
we were trying to make, and we weren't really trying to make a show that even, like, was like the... Like, it was our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And... It was a little bit more Western influenced.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I don't think so. I think what they made was a little bit more like a Western family or children's show, less like a Japanese magical girl show. But they brought in somebody who's familiar with those kinds of programs, definitely. And they also brought in another writer that was involved, Kimiko Ueno, who did like stuff for Shin-Chan and Space Dandy and stuff like that, and who's also a woman. So like you have these female writers who are doing more like family comedy sort of stuff. That's Japanese family comedy animation for Trigger. So, like, yeah, I think that definitely they weren't trying to make a magical girl show, and that's not what it feels like. But it does feel like a hybrid of those things. It feels like there's enough of that influence that it gives it that tone.
I don't know, man. All I could think was Harry Potter. I know that,
right.
that maybe that's reductive,
I mean, honestly,
but it pulls from Harry Potter
way.
So much.
And that's
that,
a pretty
like,
good thing to do a good imitation of. I think they do a good imitation of Harry Potter, and I think and the good things about Harry Potter, like... Because, yeah, it's not like, oh, this is a ripoff of Harry Potter. It's like, this kind of captures the good emotional aspects of that franchise. So I thought that was a good thing.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
No.
You don't think
it's
that
just, it... No. It, the stuff that it pulls from Harry Potter is largely aesthetic. There are a few story things that it takes, and some story beats and stuff. Like, well, plenty of story beats
well,
and
like
stuff.
Tone,
but, like,
though.
Emotional tone, like, theme and everything. No, it does not. I don't think it has that much in common with Harry Potter. Really, at all. The stuff that Harry Potter is about doesn't really show up. Like, this show is very much about... I thought that's what you meant.
No,
thematically, I was like,
I was
no?
talking about... I was talking about demographic and tone, and yes, aesthetic, and copying sort of plot beats and imagery, but not theme, no. Not characters, no.
Tone, I would agree for the first 10 episodes or so. After that, it turns into anime, very much.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The second half, I liked a little less because it was a little more... Okay, Gainax thing that's talking about itself a little bit.
I was like, oh, this is totally a Trigger show in the last half.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Because the last half, you see stars and lots of brilliant explosions, and you're in space all of a sudden. And you're like, hey, it's a Trigger show.
Well, I should clarify that I didn't dislike that, but if you gun to my head, do I like the first half or the second half more? I like the first half more because it felt more like its own thing, and the second half is like, oh, it's Gainax time. But I liked what they were saying. I liked the story that they came up with. I liked it a lot, but I didn't necessarily find the way that story was told terribly unique. But I thought it was a good story and I enjoyed it. I just was like, the first half was more like, this is really unique. Second half was like, all right, I get you. I get what this is doing. You know?
Yeah. I kind of latched onto the idea that, Akka, is that how you pronounce her name?
Akka is not that's the Natsume Ono show from Winter.
I'm thinking of a different thing.
Akko. Ko is a girl's name ending.
Akko is supposed to be Studio Trigger. Mm-hmm. She thematically is Studio Trigger.
Right.
And that holds through the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's if that's how they see themselves,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was heartwarming. Like the show is largely feels like it's about their ethos, you know, mm-hmm. like it's about their principle.
Right. Well, how would you describe that, like in the context?
We want to just we find profound meaning in making things that are just fun and bringing joy and happiness to people and entertaining people is in and of itself a noble and worthy thing, and you don't have to just make highfalutin, profound works of art to make people happy.
And we don't care about doing it the traditional way.
And tradition
or the
doesn't
right
matter
way.
To us, and your fancy tricks and CG are not interesting to us, and we're interested in the old way of doing things. And using all of our burning passion, using the old ways to make things that bring joy to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a pretty good... If you're a studio and you're very image conscious, it was good. I thought I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
And that holds through the whole show. Like, that holds through the entire show. It's a very strong through line, I think.
Especially when they bring up the idea of magic as a business, which is not initially apparent, and I think that's the biggest thing that makes it like, okay, this isn't just Harry Potter, is like we find out like the school is struggling and magic is not profitable in the age in the modern era, like, you know, the amount of energy, emotional, and training that it takes to do a thing with magic can easily be accomplished by technology now, and it is a huge money sink.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously, you know, magic is attractive to people because, again, as a metaphor for art, like, it captures things that we can't see in the real world or see from reality or from normal life, but, like, it is a large amount of money and time for something that on a practical level doesn't have as much purpose, and so it's not good for business. And you see that in, like, there's this legendary creature. It's like the dragon Fafnir, and he was an investor in the school. And so they find out that, like, and they go to his dragon's lair, and it's like a mansion where he's walking around like a giant in a giant, like, crimson bathrobe, checking the stock market, because he's decided that it's just not worth it to invest in magic anymore, and he's become like a business mogul, a stock chaser like everybody else, even though he's literally a dragon. And it's like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. And with that in mind, like, using the anime industry as a base, like, Akko becomes, if she was not a commodity before, she's even less seen as even less valuable now, because magic, like, the traditional way and people who are really good at it isn't making money. So why should they invest money into this, like, little upstart who's, like, trying to do things her own way and not very talented and, you know, kind of ramshackle and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and the show is not like this really like everything in it is a one-to-one, has a like a thematic, it's representing something thematically, and like the things in there that do represent things thematically, like, it's not like the entire story and narrative is not in service of this theme. It's just there.
Right.
And, like, the story is dramatically more interested in entertaining you and keeping the story going.
They don't...
And having all these magical plot beats and showing you exciting things and having adventures to go on. That is the show's chief concern. I found the thematic stuff to be more interesting. Like, that made the show more compelling for me, and I'm glad it was in there because it gave me something to kind of hang on to for 25 episodes or so of magical hijinks.
Yeah, like I said, I enjoyed that stuff more as a background element than I did as the focus. Like, when the second half switches into plot, like, almost 100%, I found it less engaging because the metaphor is not a one-to-one. It's not like Akko literally represents Trigger and Chariot literally represents Gainax. It's not like that crystal clear, and Croy literally represents... So there's a new professor that shows up, Professor Croy, and she, like, makes magic profitable, again, basically by infusing it with technology. And, I don't know, like, it's a cost-saving maneuver. They explain it in detail in the show in ways that I don't quite remember, but it, like, involves, like, using people's emotional energy and, like, other solar energy and
so,
things that are lost. And it's like, oh, okay, this is the full corporatization of anime.
It's like Monsters, Inc. Seen a lot of stuff lately that's like Monsters, Inc. The idea basically is if you manipulate people into fear and anger, you can use that fear and anger to generate power. But if you inspire them with happiness, Jacob, you get more power, get more magical energy, and so the scare floor becomes a laugh floor at the end of Little Witch Academia.
Yeah.
So.
I think, but once again, because the metaphor is not a one-to-one, it's not like, okay, this person literally represents this, or this. It's just sort of a broader, it's not like Croy represents a specific company. It's like, I don't know, like Croy is A1 Pictures or Seiji Kishi or some weird thing like that. It's just, The idea of corporate, the idea of corporatizing anime and what Trigger thinks of it, and how they have to kind of like bow to it a little bit and be like, yeah, technology's good and we should rely on technology, but you can't go into it with this attitude of people are sheep and just repeat these beats and just like manipulate people the way that you think you can in the industry. Like, you know.
So for a while, before Croy was introduced, there's this like Appleton Academy. Mm-hmm. Where it's like a business, like they hate witches and they're all like politicians.
It's also like an all boys school.
It's an all boys school. Mm-hmm. It's all politicians. Like, where does that fit in thematically?
I thought that was like production committees.
Did you think that's?
I thought that that's what that was, because they do pay for, they pay to keep that other school open. And like when you have people like Diana, like that reinforce, like, oh, we'll continue to support you so long as you can create debutantes like Diana, and maybe she would like to marry my son. You know, it's like they're interested so long as this becomes a big, viable, cool thing that makes money for them. But beyond that, they don't really, basically they don't have a drop of understanding of what makes art beautiful in their hearts. At least most of them don't. Andrew, who is the love interest, I guess, he's stuck in there. He doesn't really need to be in the show, but they stick him in as like maybe a love interest for Akko. But like he's also just represents like that side of the industry or that side of the world coming to understand that art is valuable, not just as a way to make money. You know, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's not perfect. It's not like all these things are one-to-one. Mm. Just, it is an interesting thing to think about, because it's obviously sort of what they had in mind
Just laying under the surface while you enjoy the surface story that even, like kids can enjoy, where it's just, like, magical adventures and neat, like, new set pieces in every episode.
Largely, I liked all that stuff. Like, it's a really compelling show. It was very breezy. Like, I got through it quickly, and I didn't feel like I had spent a ton of time watching it, even though it was a full-length show, which these days feels long. Like, 25 episodes feels like a lot now. But I got through it quick and was like, wow, that was really good. And like, and then I immediately watched the movies, the hour and a half's worth of more of it, you know, immediately afterward, and was like, oh, it's pretty good. You know, it's fine. It goes down smooth, you know, and it's fun to look at. Moving into the second half, we get into this like staff stuff where there's like seven words she has to unlock, and that's really where the Sailor Moon thing kind of comes in, because she has to go through like a different scenario every time.
Word like represents like a value, with loyalty and gratitude and self-reliance and stuff like that, where it's, you know.
Yeah. And so she has to unlock these through, like, a series of trials in which she learns something about herself. Interestingly, all of the principles that she has to learn about directly apply to an artist trying to make it.
Yes, right, right.
Directly apply. And I thought that really brought the metaphor, like, stronger forward. And it's a good, like, the stuff that they're telling you to care about, it's good. And it's true. You have to work really hard. No one's going to hand it to you. You have to be patient, supportive, caring of your fellow artists. You have to work. You have to have grit and determination and really believe in yourself in order to make this happen for yourself.
Yeah.
Those are good. That's like you don't see a lot of shows that are like specifically about artists and they have messages for artists. And like that makes it a little bit unique.
Yeah, and I thought that, like, besides just as working as a family show and being, like, Trigger's first kind of family show thing that you can show to anybody, and, like, it was kind of made for Netflix to be shown to Westerners and their children and stuff like that, like, which is neat on its own. I think the other, like, the most valuable thing about Little Witch Academia is that it proves, for people that like, maybe disparage Trigger or look at Trigger askance because they think of them as like, immature or upstarts. Purveyors of schlock or cheap or whatever. Like, I think that this show really proves that their maturity as artists and their understanding of themselves as artists and what they want to do. So I thought that was, you know, like, but yeah, like, it's not a one-to-one metaphor. All the characters aren't one-to-one metaphors for things in the industry. It's just, I think they just looked at this and they said, okay, magic equals art, specifically the art that we understand that we know how to make. Magic equals animation for us. And then the rest of it just sort of fell into place. And it's not necessarily a one-to-one, but sometimes it matches one-to-one. Sometimes Chariot really seems like Studio Gainax. Sometimes Akko really seems like Trigger. Sometimes, et cetera, at least things match up. But I don't think that that's what was on their mind the entire time. I think they were just thinking, magic equals animation. How do we convey that through this story?
Yeah.
But write about it in a way that, like, if you're not following the metaphor, if you're not invested in that aspect of it, it's just a really fun, magical adventure story.
Yeah, and the other thing that seems really well thought out about it is that they were like, okay, we want to do a Harry Potter type of thing. But we want to make it like our own. And so all everything that's in the show, everything it's talking about, these are things that mean something to those people. Like they're all less like they, it feels like they thought very deeply about who Studio Trigger is, what they care about, what's important to them, the challenges that they've faced, the attitudes that they've run up against, the kinds of people they have to work with, the kinds of obstacles that are put in their way. And then they sort of transpose that onto the Harry Potter kind of framework and made ultimately something that felt like it very much its own thing. That's really smart. And if you're going to do like a take on something, that's maybe the best way to do it is to imbue it with the things that are really important to you as an artist.
Right.
And then it becomes completely its own thing, a statement about Studio Trigger. Both, you know, not necessarily like a strong statement, not that strong a statement about Studio Trigger, but it is very much like, okay, you can put this out there as emblematic of their work, as like, this is a jewel in their crown. And it also has meaning for the studio itself and the people who worked on it, and that's all in there. And I think that's, it's really good. Like, it's for them, I think it's a landmark production.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, I would hope so. I think it's done well on Netflix. As far as I know, it does good traffic for us. People seem to like it and care about it. It's hard to gauge that stuff because usually the way that we gauge that stuff is how people talk about a thing through a season, you know? But that wasn't the case with Little Witch Academia. I saw people talking about it during the season that it aired, but like they were talking in hushed whispers and stuff because they would have to pirate it, you know?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't really allowed to be just sort of a part of a natural discussion. But once it came out on Netflix, like I did see like a burst of people talking about it, and it just seems like it's a generally understood and enjoyed. And when I went to Crunchyroll Expo, and I was I ran a panel where I had to talk about 2017 in anime, and I had to pick stuff that I thought might be the biggest of the year, and I took a chance on, because I really didn't know how people reacted to this, I took a chance on bringing up Little Witch Academia and trying to talk about it more, and the whole crowd, the whole room, like, seemed like everybody had seen it and really liked it. So, like, it got a bigger reaction than Attack on
like,
Titan.
Look, I know it's really easy, and it's tempting to get stuck in this kind of myopic bubble with anime fandom where because you don't see or hear people talking about it, or you hear or see a certain attitude like I only care about this if it's airing while the other shows air, all of that attitude is just not taking into account the size and power of Netflix and how many millions and millions and millions and millions of worldwide subscribers that Netflix has and how big an audience they reach. This stuff is reaching on Netflix a dramatically larger audience than it is hitting anywhere else. We saw chatter about Little Witch Academia before it hit Netflix. After Netflix, that's when the traffic really started picking up for us. Afterward, not before. It's a trickle of people that care about it beforehand. And it's that's an important demographic, and like that's our those are the people that we converse with, those are the people that we see in our daily dealings on the internet with anime fans. But that is a small percentage of the audience. And for this show specifically, it was very obvious that it reaches a much wider audience, becomes a much bigger thing the minute it hits Netflix. You know, I think there would be less talking about that Death Note movie if it hadn't been on Netflix.
Really?
If that had actually opened in theaters, way fewer kids would have seen it.
I mean, what happened?
Way fewer teenagers would have watched it.
What happened?
They might have snuck into it or something.
What happened to Ghost in the Shell supports your theory on that one. I think it was dead before the week was out.
Imagine if that movie had come out on Netflix and everyone can just watch it right when it comes out. What would the discourse have been like? Stronger? Lasted longer? Like a few weeks out? We're still talking about that Death Note.
Well, that's the thing. I was like, I don't know how much, like, this is just my bubble or whatever, or what I'm familiar with. But with Ghost in the Shell, when it came out in theaters, I feel like within a week, people were not talking about it anymore, and you couldn't run an editorial on it or try to bring it up. I feel like you still talk about that Death Note movie, and people are still talking about it. Like, the people were still giving the director shit on Twitter, and he quit recently.
Yeah, which, fuck that. Jesus.
Yeah, you know, that shit's gonna happen.
God.
But, like, people are still talking about it. People are still watching it. People are still discussing it. Like, even though ostensibly most people seem to hate it, it did what I think they wanted it to do, which is made it impact. So, You know, Ghost in the Shell did not make an impact, and unless you live in Japan.
I guess maybe it did a little bit. One of the things I'm a little confused about in Little Witch Academia is the sheer lack of merchandise for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we'll know how well it did if merchandise starts showing up.
Right.
Like, next year. Mm-hmm. So, like, next year, if you're in a Hot Topic and you see a Little Witch Academia shirt, mm-hmm. it probably did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how... Mm-hmm. You can gauge it sometimes.
In Japan, it didn't really go, but I don't think they were expecting it to. Like,
The interview that I read said that Yoshinori said specifically that he wanted to make the TV show a little closer to what Japan might want, but it didn't feel that way to me in the slightest. There isn't anything cultural in there that you would not understand as a Westerner.
It's more family-friendly, but it aired late at night, so it didn't air super late at night.
That is a really confusing thing to me.
It aired at, like, 8
or 9. I'm sure someone can complain this. No, it didn't. It aired at, like, we were in Japan. Yeah. I watched it on TV at, like, 11:30 at night.
I thought it was early in the evening when that...
We got home at, like, 11... That was literally one of the nights where we got back, and I was like, oh, shit, I could watch anime. It's, like, midnight. And I turned it on.
Oh, okay.
It was Little Witch Academia, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, I could watch this show legally.
Yeah, that was great.
I'm getting around you, Netflix, you know?
traveling to Japan.
It was the episode where, Ursula is, like, just about to tell one of the many episodes where she's, like, just about to tell her and then doesn't. Yeah. Something
I think it's, it was
can't.
11 or 12 or
yeah,
something.
Something like that. And it was close to the end of the first season. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, like, but the tone is family-friendly. But again, I think that's because it was heavily funded by and made for Netflix, and they wanted more of, like, a family show because that's what it looks like. That's how it plays. Even though those first two movies, they are less child-friendly than the series is, but there's still nothing you couldn't show to a kid.
I probably
they're a little
wouldn't.
More maverick.
I would probably just... You can start with just the show.
I mean, they're nothing worse... They're definitely not worse than, like, Ren and Stimpy or whatever.
Short,
they're just
the
more irreverent.
Are a little shorter. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a little bit more thigh stuff going on in the...
You're right,
movies.
Yeah. Well, they're a little more
but
triggered.
Honestly, that's not really particularly perceptible unless you're, like, mm-hmm. really, like, hey... Trigger, I fucking know.
Yes.
I know y'all perverts want to do this stuff.
Right.
Like... Uh-huh. You know, that's what I would have expected, but
the show is, like, extremely, yeah, like, you could show this to a 10-year-old girl, no problem, unless her parents are crazy.
Which
like,
is, honestly, like, you just don't see that much stuff like that.
No, not, like, not just from Trigger, but at all.
Produced at that level. I do want to talk about the animation a little bit,
uh-huh.
which I thought was pretty uniformly excellent, like, mm-hmm. across the board. That show, I felt, was, like, particularly consistent with mm-hmm. animation the whole way through, like... Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of episodes that looked shitty. There didn't seem to be that many corners cut, like mm-hmm. what I would normally expect from a TV anime. It looked better to me mm-hmm. pretty much through the whole way. Like, I feel like they just their draftsmanship and like that maybe they had enough time mm-hmm. to make it like more consistent, but I didn't think that it fell apart really at any point.
Mm-hmm.
You disagree with this, I know.
I wouldn't say fell apart, but it definitely started looking rougher at the start of the second season, and I don't know that that's because of... So I don't know how much this show had in the way of resources. I want to say a little more than the average TV anime. The only part at which it looked rougher was the first half or so of the second season, and I don't know necessarily that this was a matter of, like, outsourcing or weaker animation or whatever. It was just, like, these designs were made to be really simple and easy to animate, so when they're in constant motion and when they're doing wild takes and when they're doing comedic things, which they are doing pretty much the entire first half, even the drama is more like, you know, big soppy sad eye tears and stuff like that. But when it's more like talking about lore and having discrete conversations and foreshadowing and classrooms and stuff like that, those simple designs kind of stand out if they're just standing on screen, animated on threes, lip flapping. So I don't, that might have been it. But also I thought that the drawing was rougher and stuff like that in the first bits of the second half.
I mean, I feel like that's valid, but it's like, yeah, but it doesn't look bad. Like, it's not like the show suddenly turns to shit.
No, well, it you're right. It's a remarkably consistent production.
Yeah, like across through the whole thing, I was never like,
I would say that Kill la Kill also was, but then again, Kill la Kill had entire episodes that were devoted to... To not being animated, but it was done in a style where I thought that worked 1,000%.
Yeah, I thought it worked for Kill la Kill. I mean, look, Kill la Kill like definitely took a lot more shortcuts, and there were episodes of Kill la Kill where you're like, oh, okay,
mm-hmm. but they played that off as though, and it basically was intentional. But Little Witch Academia,
what I'm saying is that I recognize the scenes that were done that way intentionally, and mm-hmm. then there were some that were not done that way intentionally. They were done that way to save time, mm-hmm. and you can tell. And I'm saying Little Witch Academia seemed to have a lot less of that, and
definitely.
It seemed remarkably consistent mm-hmm. the entire way through. Most of my favorite design stuff was in the first half. I would say the second half was interesting, but they kind of do the thing where like they run out of giant fantasy things to do, mm-hmm. where it's like run up the Stairway of Thorns, okay, now it's a Stairway of Glass and space, and now you're in a giant forest, and now
the
it's a
second
giant,
half fell back more on classic Gainax imagery.
Yeah.
A lot.
Definitely. Yeah, it did.
Croy basically showed up with those robot spiders and the black and red robot dragon, and I'm like, all right.
It was almost
006,
like they're like,
let's go.
It's almost like the shackle. They were like,
Unit 6.
Do any more
Unit
anything
20.
Without having some fucking robots in here. It's almost like they couldn't mm-hmm. get through the show without having robots in
here. Can we do a robot? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Fine.
Well, for the finale, it turns into a missile that happens to look like a dragon robot.
Yeah, it turns out magic powers machines, too. All right, there you go.
Yeah.
And then there's that whole episode that is a robot fight. That was a cool episode, I thought. Like,
that's
really,
what I was
the
mentioning.
The robot looks really cool. Well, no, I mean, she has, like, minion robots and stuff, and there's, like, there's mechanical design that starts coming into the show, but there is the one episode that has the giant.
Yeah, that's Yo Yoshinari's background. Is he's you know he is one of several people responsible for the look of the Evangelion. So if you want to like harp on Trigger for aping Gainax or Gainax for aping itself over and over and over, like you can go a little softer on Yoshinari because he came up with those things. So I think he can kind of rip off himself if he wants to. Like the bio robot with like. Flesh turning into metal, like he can do that because he kind of came up with it.
Well, and like you know, and that's not a complaint. I guess it does kind of signal you're watching anime in some regards.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the show isn't anime the whole way through. It's just that it feels a lot more like anime when that stuff starts showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just a Pavlovian response to the aesthetic, but. It that's what it felt like.
I mean, when it's those kinds of fleshy kinetic robots, I think not so much anime, but like Gainax. Okay,
yeah,
you know, and it's
so
you know.
Story wise. What part of the story did you like the most? Like, what was the most compelling part of it to you, besides the thematic stuff? Like, just in the narrative? Like, what did you like the most?
Just in the story. I don't know. I mean, like, I can't really separate stuff. Out honestly, I mean, I feel like there were like little people got like side stories here and there, and I can't really like, but those were like usually one episode, and then for the rest of it was just Akko's arc as it tied into Diana and Croy. And
I was gonna say I liked Diana and Chariot. I liked their stories. Mm-hmm. I liked the way they were executed. I liked the story ideas they came up with. The Diana episodes I thought were really good. Like. I cared about what happened to that character. I thought that her backstory was pretty interesting. Like, just on, like, a, hey, this is pretty good narrative. Mm-hmm. I liked that stuff. I thought that was the strongest stuff. I noticed in some of the questions we got and some of the feedback that I got talking about this, people don't seem to like Akko very much. I did.
I don't know what that is. I mean...
Is it because she's, like, supposed to be dumb?
If there's an annoying, dumb main character sometimes...
Because she didn't seem, like, stupid to me. She just seemed,
She seemed pretty stupid to me, but, like, I thought that made her lovable.
She has heroic stupidity.
Yeah, like, I thought that made her lovable. Though.
Yeah, it was lovable.
Like, well, I mean, I see that with, like, if you have a protagonist in an anime, like, this is something that nerds like, people who consider themselves intellectual and, like, self-aware and, like, you know, whether it's true or not, like, those are the traits that they value. And when you have a character that is dumb... Or annoying, and unself-aware, all those things, in any combination, people get annoyed. Like, that's just how it is. People hate Eren, people hate, you know, like, what was a protagonist they really liked in a recent, like, Trigger-esque thing people didn't like Ryuko, she had the same thing going on. People loved, I don't hear almost anybody whining about Simone from Gurren Lagann. They like him more and more as it goes on. Guess what? He's a super reserved, super intelligent, like, super self-aware, self-doubting, like, guy who eventually becomes a badass and gets the girl, Simone from Gurren Lagann. Well, like, Akko is not the kind of character that I think a lot of nerds or otaku would be drawn to, like, I like her, but I she seems like definitely the kind of character who is going to get a lot of hate or consternation from that viewing audience.
But she's so determined.
Yeah, but she rushes headlong into things recklessly instead of being like, I'm going to plan this out so I don't fuck it up, even though I have a lot of self-doubt.
That's just how she does stuff, though.
I know, but that's not something that the nerds would respect.
It's a consistent characterization.
If she was shyer, if she was more moe, people would respect that more. But she's like,
or if she was, Rick
I don't know
Sanchez.
How to do this, but I'm going to do it. You know, but,
or if she
well,
was
we're
like,
going into a different, you know, yeah. a different
if
argument.
She,
there,
if but. She was Rick Sanchez or Walter White, they would think.
I mean,
was
think
awesome.
About like who's the favorite character of a lot of people of a lot of nerds at least watch the one they adopt like Susie and what's Susie like? Well, you know, she's the super like. Moe thinks things out ahead of time, kind of cruel, like cute,
detached,
you know.
Mean.
Yeah, that
I really liked the episode that took place inside of her head. I thought that was really good. I really liked the idea of her internally executing feelings that she wasn't comfortable
with.
Yeah,
that was really good.
It's really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really thoughtful. Like mm-hmm. good writing on that one. And I liked the character sort of, but it's pretty kind of one dimensional.
Well, that's the thing. So you were like, what parts of the story? And I was like, were there any other parts other than the central thread? Because the thing that I wanted more of was more of an ensemble focus, and we didn't really get that. Like I was like, oh, I wanted more
of
Latte. I wanted more of Susie. I wanted more of like Amanda and like the chubby girl and Met girl, and they got like episodes, but they didn't really, except for Latte and Susie's, which took place at the very beginning of the show, and then they never got development after that.
Commentary that I've seen is people were they liked those characters and were upset that mm-hmm. the story didn't really give them anything to do besides just be sidekicks and have like one episode that was about them. Mm-hmm. I did really like the episode. I liked their individual episodes. Like
yeah,
the episode with the Twilight book, mm-hmm. which uses the same fucking font as Twilight. Which
is
funny.
Was pretty straight up. Only that one's like 94 books long and. 200 years, and I'm like, no. No.
But it did,
if you think
episode,
it's bad now.
Stop me if I'm wrong here. That episode did kind of feel like Trigger telling fans, like, hey, leave the writing to the writers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You can't do it better, so.
Well, and not just that, but
here's
like.
Here's the attitude you should have.
It, not necessarily leave the writing to the writers, because they're like, create your own thing someday, but don't be like, I write good fan fiction or write good or do good fan art of your thing, so I should take it from you. Because what that's the premise of Nightfall. And it's like, well, it used to be better, and it turns out like Nightfall has been kept going because the old author picks a new author and they just continue it. And when the cycle is broken when that is offered to Latte and she's like, I don't want this. Like I want to respect the work that you've created, and that actually allows the author, who was feeling burnt out at that point, to like be like, oh, well, I should create this in my own image. And so, yeah, like they're saying, like, don't say, like, oh, I could write, you know, Kill la Kill or Kiznaiver or whatever better than you could, like, because that's not what being an artist is about.
You could take a crack at Kiznaiver.
Yeah,
could,
oh, no.
You could give it a shot.
I don't, you know.
You can't do that much worse.
Anyway.
That fucking show.
Anyway.
God, I hated Kiznaiver.
It did inspire strong feelings of hatred within me. Yeah. Unfortunately.
I really like I said, I really liked, originally I was kind of lukewarm on Diana, but I came around and her character arc I thought was really interesting, and the way those two characters played off each other was good, and by the end of the show I liked her a lot, and yeah, it's a, I appreciated the characters a lot.
I think, like, well, and there's lots of shows that have this ensemble cast. I mean, Kill la Kill's the same way, I guess. Yeah, Kill la Kill is the same way. They have this ensemble cast, and, like, they don't... Or, hell, no, Gurren Lagann is more this way, actually, where the ensemble cast doesn't get episodes to themselves. And I was like, well, why do people find this more upsetting in Little Witch Academia than those other two shows? And I think it's a combination of slightly less wacky tone. Like, those side characters don't just exist for comedy. Like, some of them aren't inherently funny. Like, Met Girl isn't, like, inherently funny. We should learn more about her. And also, the ending isn't just like all of the endings of these shows are everybody comes together to help each other out, but it's like en masse. And the ending of this show is everybody comes together to help each other out with their individual strengths. It was promoting individualism and individualist artistic expression rather than just we're a family. And we didn't know enough about these girls for it to be like, oh, here's your individual strength. It was just playing on the stereotypes that were established about them earlier in the series. And it's like, oh, yeah. I think that's why. Because, like, the message of this show is supposed to be about everybody's different type. You know, a believing heart is your magic, and everybody has a different kind of magic. And they didn't really give everybody else enough to do. So I think that's why it sticks out more in that show than it does Trigger's other shows that are about everybody being,
well, you know,
together.
It's a big, ambitious TV show, hard to write. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, definitely.
You know,
and it's really good. This is not to say, oh, this brings it down. It's just like, I think if that feels missing to you, that maybe that's why. But like, it's still a really strong show.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that they wouldn't eventually make a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Maybe not an entire 25 episodes more, but more at some point. And
the door is definitely open.
Maybe they'll hear the fans and do more with the side characters.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it wouldn't just be comedy, and you could have a little character building in there.
Given that the thing I've seen people react to is not so much, like, most people would probably disagree with me. I think most people like the second half more than the first. I don't know, but I feel like that's most of what I was seeing is discussion around the second half. So that may be just because it's more recent. But, like, I feel like what people want from that show is more of the feelings and the light, fluffy drama than the wacky comedy.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel that way as much myself, but like, but I appreciated both of those things. But if they make more, I feel like they should lean more on that sentimentalism rather than the wackiness. So, you know, we have plenty of the wackiness. They made the two movies, which are full wackiness and most of the first half of the show. So
I want them to make this show, but same thing, but with Chitose from Girlish Number. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think you're trying to plug a light in here, but you're okay, actually. We're okay for now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all right. I feel like putting any other character in Akko's place would create a dramatically different show.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You're like, make Little Witch Academia, and my first thought, even though I think most people would disagree with this, my first thought is another generation. It's not more of Akko. It's
I can't see them doing more with Akko, except for like making her a teacher or something. Uh-huh. Like
I think she should be an upperclassman.
Cut forward 15 years or something, and she's in Ursula's position then, and then bring in another girl, and then just tell the same story but remixed slightly.
Well, I mean,
with a girl named Koa or something like that.
Yeah, a very different kind of story if you can.
Yeah, totally. So good show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should take some Twitter questions.
CC.
On Little Witch Academia. Okay. This is an important question. A lot of people asking. Now, I don't ship anyone.
Uh-huh.
I am not someone who does that sort of thing when I engage. That's not really how I engage with fiction.
Uh-huh.
They're asking if you ship Akko and Diana.
See, so I don't really think that way either most of the time. And
if you made an OVA where that was the story,
mm-hmm.
was a romance between those two,
mm-hmm.
it would be super cute, and I would like to watch it.
I guess. I don't see
I
that
like
much
those
chemistry.
Characters.
I like them. I don't see much romantic
when
chemistry.
When this question is posed to me, I think about it, and I'm like, that would actually make a good... Like, if you wrote it seriously, if it wasn't just stupid fan wank, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wrote it seriously,
yeah,
it would be good, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see a lot of romantic chemistry between them. I saw like
no,
a,
it's just
a bond,
personalities
certainly.
That play off each other well.
Yeah, I think that they don't,
especially by the end of the show.
I think that they're too different in terms of how they relate their feelings and relate to one another and everything. Like I didn't see it as romantic per se. I guess I don't ship that. I don't not ship it. I'm not like that could never happen. It didn't jump out to me as like, oh, they should date. Like it did for some characters in Kill la Kill. Like there were definitely, I guess I did actually definitely ship some characters in Kill la Kill. But Little Witch Academia, maybe it's also because of their age.
Wait,
but,
who?
Mako and the big guy.
That's not a ship. That's canon.
No, it isn't. No,
they hint at it really strongly.
Yeah, he has feelings for her, but the end of the show ends with Mako going on a date with Ryuko, not him.
Right.
Yeah. So she goes out with Ryuko instead, and yeah, that must have been a little heartbreaking for him. But for the most part, I don't really ship things. Like it's not really how my mind works in terms of fiction, unless it's just one of those weird rare cases. But I don't know. I guess I just didn't see.
I could see it. What I'm saying is, I could see it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't. Gamagori. Somebody tell me.
I could see it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say no to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe make that.
Definitely neither of them with Andrew. I don't know what he was doing there. It's like, he's a love interest. I'm like, is he, though?
No.
He's so boring. Why would you do that?
Jeez.
Yeah.
Just insert a dude.
It's like, here you go.
Boring man.
He was boring. I don't think so.
Okay, let's see here. Golion wants to know, how do you feel about the differences in the way the characters are portrayed in the show compared to the OVAs? The character's a little bit more mean in the OVAs. The OVAs are a little more hard-edged.
Yeah, they're
slightly,
a little more
not too
wacky.
Much more, but it's more. It's wacky. It's harder edged. It's the characters a little meaner to each other. It's a little more trigger. It's a little more triggery than the TV show. The TV show is a very like kind of ironed out version of what you see in the OVAs. I like the TV show better.
Yeah, me too.
It's just a really solid production. Feels like it's appropriate for the audience that they're going for. You know, the first two felt more like. Well, we're making this kind of for family audiences, but it's really more for otaku, but also family. But
I thought it was just
otaku.
For them. I'm like, this is for the animators to animate this thing, you know?
I mean, yeah, if you want. Like, it's not just one thing, but yeah.
Yeah. I guess that was... I thought that was the main appeal. I'm like, Little Witch Academia was made for Yo-Yo Shinari and his bunch, I think. But, yeah, you know.
all right. Dr. McVay wants to know, do you think Netflix damaged the show's hype or popularity on social media by not simulcasting it? Maybe inside your Twitter bubble.
You're right.
Where your Twitter bubble is full of anime fans who are obsessed with watching things as they air in Japan. It probably seemed that way.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at things from a macro view, definitely not.
Uh-huh.
Definitely not. Okay. OWO99 wants to know... do you think symbolism in this series is too predictable? Does being predictable make you bored? I heard that Yo-Yo Shinari was disappointed himself when he said fans found out what Chariot represents so easily. What do you think?
I don't...
Was it too easy to figure out what the show was supposed to mean? Because I actually appreciate that about Trigger shows. It's not that hard to figure out what they're trying to say.
Right.
I like that.
I don't like having
to stretch so much to figure out what the fuck you're trying to say with your TV show.
Yeah, in this case, like, I don't... The only way... I don't know. Saying something that is, the symbolism is too easy means it's too on the nose and it's too uncreative and it doesn't, like... The purpose of symbolism is to make you feel the truths of something about life without just telling you directly. It's to, like, here's my message. Okay, but why do you believe that? And symbolism is supposed to, like, create a world and create circumstances in which you can see that reflected in your own circumstances in life, etc. So it's not just somebody saying, believe in yourself. It's like, here's why you should believe in yourself.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of it. So long as it's not too on the nose or preachy or, like, here's the message, I don't think it can be too obvious. And it's definitely not... I mean, this is like a family show. Like, it shouldn't be that obvious. And frankly, the family show audience is not going to get this because you're only going to get it if you're somebody who, like, really cares about animation and kind of knows something about the history of Studio Trigger. Like, you're only going to get the themes then. So, no, I don't think it's too obtuse, or excuse me, it's too easy to get, because I think it's not central to understanding the story. It's, you know, it's just in there as like a, you know, if you know this about us, etc. You know?
Yeah, it's... Like, if you said, like, oh, but did you understand a little? Well, if you got the idea that you're supposed to be brave and kind and patient and hardworking,
then
you understood Little Witch Academia. You totally got it.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff is just for us nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Alex Angelico wants to know, I love Little Witch Academia, but when's that Sound Euphonium episode have? Oh, no, why did I take this question?
Why did you take that question?
They said, well, they want you to wade into the discourse. You know what? We may still one day do... And a Sound Euphonium show. Just relax. It'll be okay. We may one day do it. I don't know when.
Okay.
We may one day do it.
I don't have anything against Sound Euphonium. It's just that people want me to, like... I'm just, like, a dolphin, and they're, like, dumping blood in the water, and they're, like, shark this up. And I'm, like, I don't... You guys have mistaken me for a shark, and I don't, like... go after these things sharkishly.
This is like a shark with a cowboy hat on saying, like, you guys think I'm a shark, but I'm not.
Howdy, howdy,
can't
howdy.
You see I have a mustache?
They want blood. That's why they want us to do Monogatari, and I'm like, you guys don't really want this, and I don't want it because it's just going to be ugly for everybody.
I don't want to have to discuss Monogatari, but I want to put the microphone in front of you and just have you talk for an hour on Monogatari. And then... watch my...
And then I get all the hate for it.
Yeah,
this is why I don't want this. Like.
Okay, AngelXO3 wants to know, are you guys comfortable adding Little Witch Academia to the anime shows starring a mostly female cast you can show to kids and families list? Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Mm-hmm. I think it would...
What else is on that list?
Princess Tutu.
Yeah.
Sailor Moon. Whatever.
Princess Tutu is a little boring for kids.
I don't think it's boring. My sister loved it. She was like 8.
I'm a victim of hype on Princess Tutu.
Right.
I had people telling me the same kind of people telling me for like a decade that it was the most incredible show ever made, and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
you shouldn't hype things like that up too much. But yeah. I would say Little Witch Academia ranks really high on that list, actually, because the animation is so good and it is like tonally consistent. It doesn't have like weird anime thing where you're like, well, this might upset parents, like, you know. So yeah.
Yeah. That's all of our Twitter questions. I did get one that I forgot to hit favorite on, but we were asked whether or not we saw Stephen King's It, which we did.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't we save that for like another podcast to combine with other like anime movies that we could watch in the next couple days?
Sure.
Like No Game, No Life, Napping Princess, It, all this shit that we've seen.
Is that how you want to handle it?
I figure we try to keep that stuff out of the series discussions, but yeah.
Okay, all right. I guess we won't discuss it now then. All right, next time.
We'll have to find out what we thought next time.
Do we have any questions from the chat about Little Witch Academia and nothing else, because the shark in a cowboy hat tells you don't talk about that? Anything else?
This was your rule. What do you...
Anybody got something for us? If Little Witch Academia compares strongly to Harry Potter, then can it be used as a reference for our current political climate, like how Harry Potter... Okay. Do not use Harry Potter metaphors. Just please don't. I am one of the people that deeply does not appreciate Harry Potter metaphors for our current political situation. They make me upset. Two, no, you cannot use Little Witch Academia to, analogize our current political situation.
Yeah. Well, the one thing in Little Witch Academia.
Oh, see this. Someone brought up Neo-Yokio, but I'm still on embargo.
Oh, yes. Now,
but I've seen the entire thing.
I've seen one episode, but we're under embargo.
Seen the whole thing.
You did? You sat through the rest of it?
I saw the whole thing.
I need to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about it next week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's when those embargoes go up.
Mm-hmm.
Neo-Yokio's coming, friends. You are not ready for it. I will tell you that.
Okay.
What's Trigger working on next? What are they working on next?
I don't recall.
There's your answer.
They don't have PVs or promotional art for anything, so I would know it then. But if it's just like text, then I don't know about it unless it's like Ikuhara or something like that, and I'm like stalking them.
Okay.
You're stalking. By the way, I'm stalking. No, I'm just kidding.
Did you follow him on Twitter and hit the translate button on his tweets?
Yeah. I say that with full, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're working with A1 Pictures, actually, coming up.
Hmm.
Let's see here. Okay, so this is a good one. I think maybe we can close out with this one. Favorite episode? I like that Diana one a lot. I think that one was my favorite.
Jeez, it's hard for me to pick one.
I like the Diana one and the one where she's... I did really like the one where she goes up to give... The fight where Chariot and Croy fight for the first time inside the tower was mm-hmm. really cool.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I was pumped up during that.
Yeah. The show... I had trouble picking a favorite character, and I have trouble picking a favorite episode because the show is so uniform that I just... I guess that's the kind of what I want to close with is, like, I liked Little Witch Academia, but, like, it didn't feel at no point... So the reason that it's, like, this is my number two Trigger show, because it was really, really thorough, and it was really well-written, and it was, like, well-managed and really cool, and, like, it was nice and good and pleasant to watch, but I was never, like, emotionally provoked or like mentally provoked by it, and I was never like inspired by it. I was never jaw dropped. It never like really, really went to like an 11 for me. It always remained at a 9, you know, and occasionally touched a 10, but it never went to an 11 for me. So like my favorite is Kill the Kill because it was at 11 pretty often. So in Little Witch Academia, it's like it's hard for me to pick one episode because I just remember thinking like that was good, that was nice throughout it without ever going into like fuck, like you know. But maybe you shouldn't feel fuck for Little Witch Academia because it's called Little Witch Academia. So, like, you know, that's not an insult. It just means, like, well, it's not my number one, but, like, it's a very strong number two, you know?
I think it is the most consistent, solid, enjoyable, and well-made thing that mm-hmm. Trigger has made so far.
I do remember. Okay, so the festival, this is a two-parter, I think. I think it's a two-parter. The festival where they get assigned...
The Samhain festival?
Yeah, where they get assigned to reenact the appeasing of the Sorrow Ghost.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Because that was
good. Those were good episodes.
Because I really liked the way that it concluded, which
yeah,
was
that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good show. I feel like I want to be thinking about Little Witch Academia for a while.
I never watched the dub. I want to go back and watch some of it in English.
Yeah, I watched it in Japanese. Mm-hmm. Just like everything else.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I go check out a dub, you know. But yeah, they said the festival's the end of the first half. All right. Yeah, okay. Well, the Sorrow Ghost, I liked it because the message, because you think, like, the stereotypical way for that to go down is like, oh, Akko does her unconventional thing, and that's what solves the problem, is, like, everybody's been doing things the same moldy old way for 80 or 100 years, and, like, she does the thing that's going to be unique and break it up, and that's not actually what solves the problem. It's not that simple. It's that Akko, like, she tries her unorthodox thing, and that doesn't work either. It's that Akko... uses the talents of her other friends, like their knowledge and their magical prowess and athleticism and stuff like that, and combines those to understand what the problem is by, like, basically speaking to the ghost. So she gets the opportunity to communicate with the ghost directly by both being unorthodox and using the other talents of her friends. So it's like this. Yeah, it's like this. It's not like, oh, you guys have been using this method. Well, this method works. It's like, well, by combining different methods and finding, like, one new one through the combination of different people's perspectives. So it was really speaking for the perspectives of a bunch of people rather than just like, well, this upstart has, you know, figured out how to solve the problem. We've just been doing it the same moldy old way for 100 years. And it's not that simple. So, yeah, I think that's why I liked it. Also, the Sorrow Ghost was really funny and just made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, it was good shit. All right, dudes. Little Witch Academia is a good show, and you should watch it if you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
It's appropriate for pretty much every audience you can think of.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that does it for us. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the chat for stopping by. The theme song is called Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us here on YouTube. Hit like and subscribe. You know all that shit. Go to Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, iTunes. Leave us reviews and stuff. It helps us out a lot when you do that. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye-bye.